numerous hearings is dozens of tenants, both residential and commercial, saying, I don't mind that this is an unreinforced building. I can't, this it's where I want to live. So I just don't find it persuasive that having the sign on the side of the building, like you, I will name one because Parks owns it, and that's Keller Auditorium. I went to a concert there last week, and I thought to myself, because I know where those buildings are, this is an unreinforced masonry building. Let's go see Death Cab for Cutie. And which, you know, maybe an unfortunate choice of which concert I was going to, but in fact, they've stayed up.
I sit on the advisory panel for the P5, and I know that they're having a great difficulty refinancing capital improvements to the Keller, including retrofitting, and this will stop. It will hurt their chances of retrofitting that building, and the building may be raised and replaced or developed.
Well, in that case, the city is going to be right in it with everybody else. In fact, as the pastors pointed out, we're in a worse situation because we can't get tax breaks either.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jim. We appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hi there. I'm Mara McLaughlin with Music Portland, and we represent the local music industry. Music Portland supports fair and rational efforts to make our city more seismically secure, appreciate that you've invested as much in the process. Particularly interested since 34, originally 38, because four of them have already closed, music venues are listed on the URM list. I could find none of them that said they had been even aware of the process. Most of them are lessees rather than owners, so that may explain part of it. However, the placarding rule under consideration today fails to improve safety, it fails to advance equity, it reduces community engagement and negatively impacts local business. The only thing placarding would do is to stigmatize select buildings without actually addressing safety, if in fact people will still go in, no problem. How does it improve safety?
Could I answer that?
Yes.
Because we had a pretty big discussion. It's about full information. It may not stop you from going in the building, and I'll be the first to admit I go into buildings all the time that are unreinforced, in part because I work in a lot of them, in part because I choose to of my own free will. But I also know the risk, and if there is an earthquake, that informs my decision about how I want to react in that earthquake, whether I want to duck and cover under the desk, or whether I want to get the heck out of Dodge, or whether I want to leave the basement or come down from the roof. It's, from my perspective, it's added information.
And the sign doesn't give me any of that information of what to do. It just says you're at risk.
Well, we're going to develop the materials, as my amendment said, so sure. That we can make them available to private property owners as well.
Okay. Venues operate on very thin margins. It feels disingenuous to me that there will be no impact at all on the businesses. That doesn't feel like a fair statement because I believe it will. You know, Eve, just it will. If, as council suggests, there's no impact, then why do it? And you've explained some of that. If it is to build public support, as Commissioner Fritz has suggested, then why only do it on a select group of buildings? Let's see. Given the fact that these buildings would need to have up to level 5 reinforcements to get the placard removed, it disincentivizes the owners from actually doing the work once the placard is up. That seems sort of nonsensical. The accommodation proposed for churches demonstrates that community gathering places merit special accommodation. Indeed, live music venues are the secular churches of our community. Our popular music culture is a potent community-building force, unifying both new and longtime residents of all colors, ages, and economic strata more than 1,000 times every month, month over month. In a city that values... I assume I can do a little more.
Yeah, okay. I stopped.
In a city that values social sustainability, arts and culture, and quality of life, the negative placarding impacts on live music venues confounds those priorities. Furthermore, it absolutely fails the equity test. It's hard not to be cynical about a policy that threatens to stigmatize small property owners, low-income renters, and small businesses rather than the high-rises and condos that sit in liquefaction zones. Music Portland would strongly support a citywide public education program in lieu of the placarding to make Portlanders aware of all risks that they face and align them behind constructive rather than fear-based policies that threaten to do more harm than good. The music community would be thrilled to be an ally in promotion of such a program and really give a great platform for that. This would be a more equitable, effective, and constructive approach for our city. Thank you for your service and for the chance to talk today.
Thank you. We appreciate your being here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Bishop Marcus Irving, Albina Christian Life Center, and I am also a part of the group of ministers that you just heard from. But to Commissioner Saltzman and to Mayor Wheeler and to Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Udaly, I appreciate this opportunity to be able to speak to you. I feel like I'm in Afghanistan with a peace shooter. I found out about this process in May, and all of us ministers are scrambling around trying to make sense out of this that you have been working on for over 4 years. It's not fair. It's not fair for the rest of the building owners, many of whom have not been contacted. They have no idea that they're getting ready to put a placard on their buildings. My father was displaced by Portland Community College when we had the Walnut Park Theater over on Albina and Killingsworth. And we moved to the building that we're at now, and here we are once again facing displacement. And I feel like I might as well just give you the keys now to my building, because I can't afford to have an inspector. I can't afford to there's no way in the world my congregation can go out and buy a $1 million building right now, because we couldn't pay the loan back. And we're facing an impossible situation, and all 1,600 of us are in the same predicament here. But there's a scripture, Psalms 18th chapter and 7th verse. It says, "Then the earth reeled and rocked. The foundations also of the mountains trembled and quaked because he was angry." I need to say that I don't think any one of you, any one of the fire marshals, can tell us right now which building in this city won't fall, retrofitted or unretrofitted, when God begins to shake this earth. And I think that we are really in a being done a disservice. And my time is up, but just give me 20 more seconds. I'm a preacher. 20 more seconds. I did a funeral last week. I didn't have time for this. The family of the deceased person had absolutely no idea what to do. And so as a minister, we went to the funeral home. We took them by the hand. We led them through everything. By the end of the funeral, and then after our Sunday morning service, Monday, I poured myself out on the couch. I was totally, totally exhausted, only to find myself having to come here because of imposition concerning these placards. And concerning the placards, anybody, I feel that the placards are in every way a disservice to all of us, and it's a detriment to every building that will have to put those placards on our buildings, because we have factions and groups that will walk past our buildings, whether they're members or attendees of our churches or not, and they'll form committees. And they'll be asking me questions, and because I'm doing funerals and weddings and counseling, I don't have time to talk to them about these placards or anything else. Sometimes some of us didn't choose our buildings. Our buildings chose us. And that's what we have. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Bishop.
Sorry for taking.
Not at all. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
The next three are Roger C. Jones, Nathaniel Brown, and Kathy Rogers. And they'll be followed by Matt Reed, Nancy Chapin, and Dan Lenzen.
Good afternoon. Would you like to go ahead and start?
Go ahead.
Me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kathy Rogers. Thank you for listening and hearing what we have to say. I have one ask, that the issue of these placards be put in the committees that are newly being formed and is discussed and evaluated and looked at around all of the issues amongst one piece of a larger puzzle. Commissioner Saltzman, you indicated that part of the reason of the placarding is to spur public discussion and support for seismic upgrades. If that's truly the case, why don't we notify everybody who lives or works in the high liquefaction zones, which includes downtown, the Pearl District, and the South Waterfront? If everybody who lives or works there got a letter indicating that it was a high liquefaction zone, that may raise some awareness. Why don't we notify everybody who has gas coming into their building, whether it's commercial or residential, that a $400 automatic gas shutoff valve would dramatically reduce the dangers in an earthquake? Somebody told me that. I had no idea. No idea. I had gas coming into my home. The minute somebody from the gas company told me that, we had one immediately installed. An education process there. I believe there's some 40,000 buildings in the city of Portland that have gas coming into them, and not very many have gas shutoff valves. You also indicated, Commissioner Saltzman, that we had a four-year process. We did. We had a URM committee, and I was at many of those meetings. They discussed placarding at length. They unanimously voted against it. There's a reason for that. In terms of the database, we all know it's inaccurate. And with all due respect, if a building owner believes that their building is not a URM building and there is some question in ours, I can pretty much guarantee you that the cost of the proof is going to fall on the building owners. We've already spent $8,500, and it's still unclear. So who's going to pay for the proof of whether it is or it isn't? In terms of insurance, I don't know what insurance you guys have been talking to, but my guess is that the reason the cost of insurance won't go up with placarding is because most property insurance doesn't cover earthquake. Doesn't cover it at all. You have to have earthquake insurance, which we have. And I have had discussions with our insurance agent who indicated that this will be troublesome, not only for the cost, but even for our ability to maintain earthquake insurance. If an event happens, earthquake insurance is going to be key to rebuilding. Elizabeth has spoken with our insurance agent, and all I can tell you is what they have told me. We pay $12,000 a year for earthquake insurance, and I'd like to keep it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Nathaniel Brown. I'm a government relations specialist with the Portland Business Alliance. The Alliance represents nearly 1,900 businesses, a majority of them small businesses, and hundreds of property owners throughout the Portland metro region. As you're aware, we've been closely monitoring the city's process to develop this mandate to retrofit URM buildings, and we were largely in support of the resolution that passed in June that outlined the various class requirements and the retrofit timelines. We certainly understand that these vulnerable buildings pose a safety risk in the event of an earthquake. However, we are very concerned that placarding will go into effect before any clear upgrade requirement or financial incentives are in place, which is at direct odds with the city's URM Stakeholder Advisory Committee recommendation of voluntary placarding for compliance. We do appreciate the clear direction in the June resolution to identify incentives and other financial support for property owners, but the mandate will have a financial impact on property owners and commercial tenants, particularly small businesses in neighborhood districts. The placard may further impact revenue and the property owner's ability to finance the required seismic upgrades. Because of these serious concerns, our strong preference is to refer discussion of the placard requirement to the new stakeholder committees formed to evaluate the retrofit requirements. If the city does move forward with a requirement today, it is essential that the provisions within the requirement for an appeals process remain. The city has stated, as we've discussed today, that the accuracy of the URM inventory cannot be confirmed due to a number of factors. Property owners must have a way to avoid the placard if the building has been upgraded to current standards. Additionally, the requirement must include a swift process to remove the placard after the building has been upgraded. We recognize the difficulty of balancing public safety, the need for affordable commercial and residential space, and financial impacts on building owners. We also urge the city to monitor the impacts, the economic impacts of any placarding requirement should it move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you all. It's good to see you here, and I'm sorry that after May 9th and then June 13th, this has been such a rocky road. It's been a little seismic for a lot of us, but things changed on June 13th, and an urgency happened. We were hoping to be all on the same path forward with the new committee that, thank goodness, you guys have done. But one thing sticks out, and that is placarding. I don't want to separate that, but placarding is putting the cart before the horse, and I'm sorry Nick's not here. He used that term when we were talking earlier. Putting the cart before the horse is like penalizing people for owning URMs. It is a stigma. It is a very negative process. I know that the policy committee has said that's not what they want. They want attaboys. They want to set a good example for the future so that we can move ahead. Others have stated the list is faulty. I'm not going to go there because I have my own thoughts about it, and I've told you before, and if we continue to use a defective list, it'd be like me going into the Bureau of Buildings and saying I need a building permit to build a sandbox, and I don't know how to build a sandbox, but give me a permit for it because, you know, I think I want a sandbox. This is an enforcement action, and the first thing that the government is trying to say to a property owner is the first line of the notice. It says this is an unreinforced masonry building. The owner can't prove that without a very invasive process to say it. So what's going to happen, in my idea, is that when people get those notices, they're going to disregard them. Sadly, it would be a good thing if we could enforce it, but we can't. We're going to do it wholesale on every URM building, and they can't prove that the first line is true. If I owned a URM, I could not state definitively this is an unreinforced masonry building. Am I out of time? Oh, 30 seconds. I just want a process that works. I would hope that you would pull back, as many others have said, and take this under advisement as all of the constituents and the affected parties, and put it back into the process that's going to go on for the next year to get a process that works. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three are Matt Reed, Nancy Chapin, and Dan Lenzen, and they'll be followed by Robert Hunter, Tommy Lee Smith, and Doug Klotz.
Good Hi. Afternoon.
How are you?
Good. Thank
Good.
You.
Thanks for having us, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. I think a lot has been said that I would have already said, so I'll just kind of ditto Angie over there. I kind of agree with most of what she put down. I want to kind of identify that we've owned our building in the Pearl District since 1969, 70. We're very good stewards of it. I've had it since 96. Very proud of it. We've kept it up to current code. We had our roof redone. During the code, in the code, it was asked that we earthquake our pulpits and our water tower and our roof. We did. It worked perfectly. So we're earthquaked halfway. We're looking to do our walls. We know that we're going to need to do our walls. Hey, look, we all want the same thing. You know, we're all, I'm a fourth generation Oregonian. We want a safe building. I'm really proud of our building. We survived. So many buildings around us have not. And we have a bunch of small businesses in there. And I kind of want to address Mr. Saltzman, or Commissioner Saltzman, excuse me, that, you know, and I appreciate your strong opinion of how you feel about it. I just, after running a building for 30 years, disagree. I'm going to have some trouble. And when I start having trouble and they ask me the question, I think the question you said is, it's going to start a conversation with your tenants about, hey, Mr. Owner, why haven't you upgraded the earthquake? Well, we're going to level 2. The requirement that the engineer's talking about is level 4. If I do that, they're not going to be in my building anymore. In fact, my building may not be there anymore because it's cost prohibitive. And it's that. And so the city, if they can help us do it, we're on the same team. We want the same thing. But by blacklisting or putting a scarlet letter on my building when we're doing everything we can to be in code, be good Portlanders, and supply a business application for my, I got great small businesses there. A lot of them, they do shoes. They invent things. They're all going to be displaced because they're not going to be able to afford to be there, and that's the answer to your question. Why haven't you done it? Because you won't be here anymore because you can't afford to be in here. I'll have to raise the rents too much to get to that level 4 to get the placard out of here. I fully intend an earthquake. I want an earthquake, but I think there's a process of when we redid our roof, we earthquake. We did our pulpits. We did our water towers. When we do the next step, we'll do our walls, we'll do our, and the lines are set, and we'll go walk down that path. We hope that Salem will come through and help us a little bit. Most of these people in here are just like me. They're retirement funds, they're Oregonians, and they love their properties. They're not trying to chintz out. So with that, I just want you to know, the process worked for us. We're already on our way. You don't need to placard us, because that could actually harm us, and I disagree with you. It will harm us. Okay. And that's from 36 years of renting a property. It will. Okay.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Nancy Chapin, born here in 1939. And once again, at least for the third time, maybe the fourth, maybe the fifth time, I'm ashamed of my city fathers and mothers, who, by approving this staff and council-driven ordinance, will have once again targeted a class, a group of people. This time, those who own or occupy 1 to 3 story URM buildings. The actions of staff and the council over the life of this process have caused financial institutions to essentially redline this class, this group, and have created a potential bonanza for developers to take over, redevelop, and change beautiful, important, historical aspects of what created and makes Portland, Portland, all while financially impacting many owners and residents. Fear itself is no reason to take over properties and residents of this group, class of owners, businesses, and residents. I truly hope you see the irreparable damage you have already caused and stop this process immediately. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
To
Thanks
speak.
For being here. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hi, Dan Lindzen. Frequent flyer here at City Council. Of course, you guys have seen me, and thank you for listening to all of this. There's been fabulous comments and quotes, and it's been across the board of what, you know, everybody's thinking. To get to here, I'm, you know, living proof of the last 30 years of hospitality industry in the city of Portland, born, raised, and having started small businesses numerous times, and owned and developed buildings, including the Grand Central building on the east side, which we did structurally reinforce, as well as other buildings that we couldn't afford to, so we ended up having to sell them. So anecdotally, I want to bring forward just a point The U sign, which is a placard, was applied to our favorite, now gone, the Lotus. Some years ago when the landlord had a bad upstairs, we were on the first floor. During that time, then I was interviewed by a neighborhood fire marshal in the news station about safety of nightclubs and bars in the city of Portland. The Lotus was known as a very, very safe place. Incidentally, that night the Rhode Island fire occurred, and they had already scooped this story. So there's two stories going along at the same time. That showed that the Lotus was very safe. It spoke loudly to the business and the operators, of which I was an owner. Also, the U was on the outside of the business at the same time, and we saw immediate effects for a lunchtime business. So, Dan, it does affect, yes. It does affect them in two ways, as you're saying. One, people are going to think. I get that. Totally. But on the other side, it's, oh, I don't know. I'm going to choose something else, maybe a food cart because it's not a building. But it did affect. So we put the U on the upstairs where it should have been. We saw business come back because they felt comfortable. So there's kind of a couple anecdotal stories there, as well as my experience having done this thing and feeling comfortable about doing it right and understanding when I couldn't do it, and we do lose our building because we can't afford to do it. So I've got a lot of experience in all this, and I appreciate all y'all really spending a lot of time in this 4 years. Honestly, I have a URM right now. I didn't know anything about this placarding. So I think the outreach is not there. If anything, education, that's what you want to do. Let's spend some money on education about these buildings to the general public. I really think that we need to get that out there. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three are Robert Hunter, Tony Lee Smith, and Doug Klotz. And they'll be followed by Tim Davis, Greg Harris, and Moshe Lenski.
I think Tim Davis is left.
Good afternoon, sir. Would you like to go ahead first?
Yes. My name is Doug Klotz. I support this ordinance. We need to let people know which buildings are URMs and use that information as they will. I visited San Francisco 30 years ago, and they had placards on buildings then, and people, as far as I could tell, were not making any choices to not go in there. I went in the buildings that had the plaques. I, in fact, worked in Portland for 13 years in an unreinforced masonry building. And I also worked another 17 years of my career in an unreinforced concrete building where the trusses were not tied to the walls. I did work there. I didn't quit my job, but I remained aware of the risks every day for 30 years, looking around, okay, if there's an earthquake, where am I going to run? And we go over there, under that, under this. So I don't want others to have to live this way. For the length of time I did. I support the program to require retrofitting, and I laud this as at the very least the city could do to forward that conversation, and this is a first step toward raising awareness. I think we will do it more effectively than any public service announcements or any outreach. Just seeing those things when you walk down the street, that's going to raise awareness. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Tony Smith, and excuse me. My concern about the mandate and the placarding is that it's negative and it will have effect on what is the very heart and soul of Portland. These artists, entrepreneurs, musicians, and bars and restaurants have become world famous, and people are moving here because of them. We're celebrating the maker culture, and these are the very community that will be suffered and harmed the most. They're the ones who have no idea also that the pending placard and mandate is happening. The building owners don't know. So I politely disagree with your assessment that there's been education in the community. There has not been education. There are many, many people that do not know this is pending, as well as the inconsistency of the list itself. There are probably people on the list that have no idea that they that are not on the list that have no idea they are URMs, and they will be subject to these the placards and the mandate. I agree with many of the other testimonies that say this is not a public safety issue. It doesn't assist in educating or helping people. Knowledge that it's a URM doesn't give them any information about how they should act in it, as well as building owners are not going to be able to get loans to improve their buildings, so now their buildings will go in disrepair rather than improving them and maintaining the seismic upgrades. I urge you to vote no on this negative platforming and lean into education, or take the placarding conversation back to committee with the rest of the mandate. Thank you for your time, and thank you so much for the open dialogue and inviting the community to testify and continue talking with you about this issue.
Yeah, we appreciate your being here. Thank you. Good afternoon, sir.
Mayor, commissioners, my name is Robert Hunter, and I own three buildings that were on your list. One was taken off. It's a cinder block building. One is a brick building. It's still on. And the other one is a cinder block building. And it sits over there in southeast Portland on sediment left by the Missoula flood 15,000 years ago. It's a liquefaction area. And I pulled up one of your maps, one of the Portland maps for liquefaction. And it's all, like it's been said, it's on up and down both sides of the Willamette, in the Pearl, northwest Portland, southeast Portland. Now, instead of placards, why don't you make signs and put on each street corner in these areas, educating the citizens of Portland that this is a liquefaction zone and it's susceptible to land sinking. All you have to do is look at what happened in Christchurch. There are some videos on YouTube that will show you that. That way, you would educate the entire city of Portland and not go after just building owners. And then you can deal with building owners on an individual basis. I will retrofit all of my buildings. One doesn't have to be retrofitted, but I will do that because I think it's great to do that. The other one, the brick, I'll do that. The third one, which is questionable, I call the city engineers to ask them to assist me determine whether it needs to be on the list. And this woman was very helpful, but she wrote me a letter back and told me I had to get involved with maybe have an engineer look into it, which a neighbor who is with an engineering company said, Robert, I don't think that is a URM building. It's cinder block, and there's rebar in that. So now I'm left with having to hire an engineering firm to find out whether it is, because it's on the list possibly by mistake. So what I want to leave you with is that I think educating the entire city by signs on every corner of the city saying this is a liquefaction zone and it's susceptible to earthquakes. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks, all three of you.
And I have it sounds like Tim Davis has left. So the last two who signed up are Greg Harris and Moshe Lenski.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us here. My name is Greg Harris. I'm the owner of Roosevelt's Terrariums on Hawthorne Boulevard. I'm also the co-president of the Hawthorne Boulevard Business Association. And I'd like you to stop and listen carefully for just a moment. Did you hear that? That was the sound of a silent economic earthquake that is rolling through Portland and bringing down buildings unnecessarily. If you listen closely, you can hear the sounds of laughing developers swooping in like looters after a disaster. And you can also hear the collapse of many political freeways that are careers collapsing from the devastation. The fallout from this mandate and the placarding is going to cause tremendous amount of suffering and financial disaster for many, many people who have no backup system. And it could be avoided by simply stepping back from the precipice and including more people in the process. There have been many suggestions made here today that I think are valid. I believe that different ways of educating the community, that there could be a means of assisting and funding for those who want to retrofit their buildings and who have the means to do so, but they would need to have some kind of assistance that could be a cooperative operation between private and public agencies and funds. The Portlanders that I know would be willing to step up and endure the expense involved in creating a fund that would rescue important landmarks in our community and would be able to make sure that 100 years from now, we're not shaking our heads with regret that we've lost so much of what makes Portland, Portland. In conclusion, the Hawthorne Boulevard Business Association has been following this issue closely, and we would make the following two requests. Number one, that you would refer this action to the stakeholders in the community and allow them to have a more audible voice in the process and to be able to bring their experience to the team and to work together to find solutions that are not going to create so many unnecessary casualties. And secondly, to seat a small business association representation on that committee. HBBA would be willing and would appreciate being considered for this position. But we believe that education is important, but education all around. There are many options that are not being effectively considered, and I would like to see those brought to light. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Good afternoon. Last but not least.
Mr. Mayor and commissioners, thank you for starting a long process. You may have been exposed or not to this little book called The Earthquake Engineering Handbook.
I'll wait till that comes out on audio books.
It's very interesting, and it has. Don't start timing. Don't time me yet. Please.
I'll ask you a question, Ms. Zelensky, so you can just keep going.
It tells you how much more there is to do, but thank you for getting along as far as we have them. I'd like to make three points, if I may. First one is about the placards. I'm assuming that putting a safety number on a masonry building doesn't say that a wooden building is safe. That would be bad, wouldn't it? The placards, it seems to me, should have a more positive message, such as for the citizenry that they heed any alerts. Something's going to happen sometime, somewhere, who knows what, when, where we're doing. Nobody, it's a phantom, but it will happen probably. Citizens should heed alerts and then should have some idea of where to go, what kind of place to go, and what place kind of place to avoid. That's an even positive message for everybody in the city. Finished with that. Next thing that I would like to talk about is the professionalism, lack of it, of the database that you're using. I don't understand it at all. I own a two-story building, 1910, exquisitely built with a marble threshold, and so they grade it as an occupied building. It's an unoccupied warehouse. So on top of that, they're just wrong. You know, they haven't examined it. They haven't been there. And so they're just wrong. On top of that, they have a mechanism in which they have it for buildings. They come up with an occupancy of 100. I don't know if that's a standard number or by footage or whatever, something. So here we have your data, 100 occupancy, actual zero. If it's 100 to zero, that's about 100% long, wouldn't you say? I mean, just offhand. Moving on. They also claim that it's what's the word? Help me.
Unreinforced?
The fact is that a car tried to drive through our building, and it collided with an 18-inch, turned out to be steel, filled with whatever it was, and so forth and so forth. And they left a little bloody mess. But anyway, so... But the point is, the building was built with this reinforcement in stepped concrete in the basement, et cetera, et cetera. It's a well-built building. So they're wrong on three things, and I could go on more, but I think you get the picture that if you're basing yourselves on this data or this kind of data, you better look at your whole cards big time. Because, I wish I had more time.
So do I. It's been enjoyable. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And I feel badly because now you have to take that book back. But it's, thank you very much. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, so did we want to bring staff back to have some follow-up questions?
There is a really important point.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead,
please.
In the environment, we do an environmental impact statement, right? Mm-hmm. What this calls for is an economic impact statement. You know, what's the city losing? What's the city going to have to pay for on all its buildings, et cetera, et cetera? Do they have the money? Do they have the staff? Do they have the kind of people that, you know, you have a lot of property, and it's, I suppose you can't just exempt it or the way they do, you know, it would come under the same sort of thing. So if you would do that, and I think this would go over into other things. You know, old brick buildings have lower rentals, and we're talking about affordable housing. You might be losing a whole bunch of affordable housing with what you're doing. So you need a whole larger economic impact study to really know what's being affected. That's before, this is, don't do it.
Thank you.
I actually have a question for Chief Myers.
Sure.
And I'm wondering if...
Why don't we have the whole team come on up just so you're all here. And you can slide some chairs if you need to.
Is Shelley from Prosper Portland still here?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I was looking right at you as I said that.
And if you wouldn't mind, it's been a while, just when you talk, could you just reintroduce yourself for the record? Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Commissioner Fritz, of course.
You.
Sorry.
Chief, it was mentioned about the U that's on a building. And tell people, what does the U mean?
Thank you, Commissioner, Mayor Commission. I'm Mike Myers. I'm the fire chief for the city of Portland. Some of you may recognize as you drive around town a large red U that occupies some of our buildings. That U is not meant for the public to recognize for their own safety. It is actually for the firefighters. So you know, there's a lot said today about the safety and welfare for individuals moving in and out of the buildings, and we spend a lot of time making sure that the buildings are also safe for our firefighters to go inside. There's a lot of very old buildings. There's a lot of unkept buildings. When we get a call for service, we have about a 5-minute response time and about 10 seconds when we arrive, literally 10 seconds time to make a significant decision where they're going to enter the building or not. And so I make some, by myself and other fire chiefs that are on the scene, make some very difficult decisions to send city employees into very dangerous buildings. So we go out beforehand throughout the year. We have a battalion chief that has this assignment. That individual works very hard and working with business owners and identifying buildings that are unsafe. And there are many factors that go into making that decision. It is not an easy decision for the building owner. It is not an easy decision for us. But ultimately, there's a couple things happen. One, we ultimately decide that we're going to put the U on the building. That does stimulate the owner to some point to get the U off on some cases. In some cases, they don't care. And the second is the building owner. We work with that individual to help them figure out what it's going to take to get the U off. So it's not something readily known to the public. We don't advertise that's an unsafe building to the public. We do that so our firefighters know that when they make entry, there may be missing portions of the floor. There may be multiple roofs. There may be limited access. They may find themselves easily trapped. There may be collapse hazards within the building. It's just many, many factors. But that's what that U is about. And it's been going on here in Portland for quite some time.
So a firefighter responding to an emergency wouldn't necessarily go right into the building if there was a U on it?
Not necessarily. It's hard to say. Those decisions are made at the freedom of the commanding officer when that officer arrives. But I can tell you it would be likely that they would not enter a building with the U on it. However, if there is a rescue necessary, there's an individual in there, and we know there's an individual in there, those firefighters will probably take pretty significant risks to enter the building anyway.
Appreciate the service of the officers. And will these placards make any difference to whether firefighters go into buildings or not?
No, I do not believe they'll make any difference at all. That's not it has not been discussed at our operations meetings. I can tell you my experience would suggest it would make no difference whether a firefighter would enter a building or not. I came in here a couple years ago. This was after the prior fire chief was very successful, and Commissioner Saltzman, in getting the nightclub sprinklers on. And I know that every time we make a difficult decision, balancing what is inappropriate for public safety for the public, at the same time, we're hearing today, and we're not ignorant of this fact, that there's a balance. We want vibrant cities, we want businesses to thrive, and we want commercial space to be occupied, and that's all part of it, that equation. And business owners will tell you they want a safe building too, largely, when we go in and talk to them. And I thought that was a smart thing to do. I'm glad you took those steps, Commissioner, years ago with the prior fire chief. We have another pending issue with high-rise properties in the city of Portland that aren't sprinklered today. And I'm aware of those issues, and we will have to take steps at some point to remedy those. These are not inexpensive fixes, but we've seen demonstrable disasters around the world if we don't take these necessary steps. But what I'm seeing is good conversation between public officials, commissioners and mayors, and the public around how we get that done and that balance. And I want you to know that we are aware of that also in the Fire Bureau.
Thank you. And then just going back to the U buildings, do you have any data on how many of the U buildings have been brought up to code, how many just keep operating, and how many have closed?
I don't have that data with me. I can easily get that data. If that's something you are interested in, we can definitely get that.
I would think so.
Can you help me and formulate your question to me in an email, and I will make sure I pass that along and get that done?
Yes, I will do that. Thank you.
Awesome. Yep, we will take care of that.
But just to summarize, if a building were generally unsafe, it would probably already have been inspected and already have the U on it. What we're talking about here is buildings that would be unsafe only in the event of a major earthquake.
That's my understanding, yes, only in the event of a major earthquake.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Commissioner Udaly.
Yeah, I had a question for the chief. So some of the most compelling testimony I heard today was about the fact that there are multiple types of buildings that are more likely to come down in a major earthquake, as well as these liquefaction zones. Of course, we can't do a lot, I think, retroactively about liquefaction zones. Buildings can be built to different standards, new buildings, but I'm certainly in agreement that we need to do a much better job educating the public about all the risks involved with a major earthquake and ensuring they're prepared. That said, it's my understanding that unreinforced masonry buildings pose a kind of extra hazard to the public safety in that they're likely to collapse and the debris will fill our streets and prevent emergency vehicles from reaching survivors, fires, etc. Do you happen to know what those other types of buildings are and if they're on a par with the risk of the buildings we're talking about today?
So I'll be as frank as I can without scaring the public. So here's where we're at.
If anyone's read articles about this earthquake, they're already scared.
Yeah. And it's just not about earthquakes. You know, there's, I thought one of the pastors said it best with his quote, his verse. The magnitude of the earthquake matters, and the magnitude of every disaster matters. I don't care if you're on the coast and you're facing hurricanes, tsunamis, heat waves. The potential disaster is really about magnitude. The higher the magnitude goes, the potential could be extremely bad for Portland. We have no idea on the level of the disaster that we could possibly see based on the size of the magnitude. If we're looking at an average-sized earthquake and what it might do to buildings, and we are looking at trying to remediate and fix some of those buildings on what is likely to happen, I think that's what we're talking about here today. Can we make Portland entirely safe? Absolutely not. There is a lot of potential danger, not just in our city, but multiple cities across the United States that are in earthquake zones. Those are all over. And we're not the only city that faces this issue. We are taking, I think, an appropriate step. I'm not talking about the placarding. I'm talking about taking steps to remediate unreinforced masonry buildings. Just like we need to put sprinkler systems in areas of occupants and high rises. These are minor steps that I think we should take. If we didn't, I think we would be remiss in our duties if we just didn't act. And I thought there was a lot of good testimony today, a lot of good conversation about what other people would like to see, and that's good public government. But I think everybody would agree in the room we should do something about this, right? And so at what point do we do something, at what level? So largely we're talking about brick buildings. You did specify the types of buildings. These are largely the brick buildings, which I frequent as well. I happen to live downtown here, and so I'm in and out of these buildings all the time, shopping and doing my daily activities. So I'm very aware of those buildings and the wonderful exchange of vibrancy that goes on in the downtown area.
But the question remains, why would we target one particular type of building that's vulnerable to collapse in an earthquake when there are others, and maybe that should go to our engineer. Right?
Yeah, so again, just looking at performances of these type of buildings from around the world, URM types of buildings have been shown to be the most prone to earthquakes, especially even on small earthquakes. For example, in the mid-90s, we had the Malala High School that even under a 5.4 earthquake, we had the facade falling off the building on the thing. So they are very susceptible just because of the construction type. They are very brittle materials. The floors and walls are not attached together, so when the earthquake happens, they just separate and cause the collapse of the building. So every earthquake you see around the world, these buildings have been shown to be the most vulnerable of any other type of construction. Yes, there are other types of buildings that are also vulnerable, but these are the ones that are the most dangerous of all of them.
And when we say you're, are we including brick, stone, and concrete?
Yes, all those are considered unreinforced masonry buildings.
Okay. My next question is for Shelley. I think while we did an excellent job on the kind of structural and engineering analysis, we didn't do a great job on the financial analysis or impact to the building owners and the city. And so one of the things that I've committed to as we move forward on other pieces of this conversation is discovering, developing financial incentives and lending products that are viable for most of these, that would be viable for most of these building owners. So can you talk about where we're at with Property Fit?
So with Property Fit specifically, the program is active. We've closed our first transaction, and it was on an unreinforced masonry building that's being renovated and will be put back into use. It had, was a vacant apartment building. It's now it will be put it back into use as a social hotel or hostel, and that's scheduled to come back online in 2019. As far as the actual financial analysis in general, I think what we learned through the process is that the financial needs of the individual property owners, as well as the costs associated with the retrofitting the unique individual properties, is that you need a suite of financial tools that are going to meet the unique needs of each of those components. And so through the support conversation, or the what started out as the incentive committee, we identified a suite of financial products that would be of value to building owners. The challenge is finding the capital to actually fund them. And so some of the ideas that we identified was, one, was expanding the authority, the statutory authority under the PACE, authorizing PACE legislation for a property fit, which we were successful in doing. We also went to the legislature to gain approval of a property tax exemption program, what is called SB 311. There's conversations now about, okay, how do we take this statutory authority and now actually exercise it and put it into programmatic form. Some of the financial product types that we've been talking about are something as unique as a shared appreciation mortgage. Some of the property owners, the buildings will not afford additional debt, that the economics of that building, the amount of revenue and the cost of operating will not allow it to actually service new debt. And so a shared appreciation structure is one where you could, it would be a lien against the property, that there would be no payments required, and at the end of the term there would be a return of that investment. That would serve the needs of a unique set of building owners. Some building owners just need the economics of the current real estate market to catch up with what that debt service might be. They might benefit from yet an interest rate buy down or some other type of financial tool. So really the crux of it is we've come up with some ideas of what this suite of products could be. In order to actually put those forward, we need the capital with which to make the investments.
Right.
So that's the challenge at the moment.
And just this seems like a good opportunity to clarify something that some people may have been a little confused by. There are a couple reasons that we're giving a longer phase in for nonprofits and churches. But a big reason is we don't have financial incentives or lending products for them because they don't pay property taxes and they don't, I mean, it's just a very different scenario for them. So while I certainly value, appreciate, patronize many businesses that are in URMs and wouldn't want to see them go away, those property owners aren't subject to kind of the same challenges that nonprofits and churches are. And that's why we have distinguished them. Yeah, thank you.
I just had a couple of questions. Jenna, could you tell us a little bit more about, we heard a lot about decision making. Could you tell us a